Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 686. We're here to recap some of the August surprises, like we do every beginning of each month, what took place and some names that might stand out to you, pitchers, hitters, and whatnot, as well as recap week 24 Fab, coming at you a day later than usual because Monday was a holiday and we were doing some other stuff there. But in order to help me recap as usual and have some more fun talking fantasy baseball as we're in September, a few more weeks to go, you can find him on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing very well, Bubba. Thanks for having me on again. It's, like you mentioned, it's September now, and we were saying before we started recording that we're both ready for the fantasy season to end. As much as we love it, it's just it's getting to that point where it's tedious, but it's hopefully it'll be rewarding down these next 4 weeks.
Yeah, it's that time of the year, especially when we do the Fab recaps, I just look at some of the names that are out there, and you can tell the grinders, and that's what's taking place. It's some very interesting ad drops each week, and a lot of it's team needs. It's not just, hey, go get the new toy. A lot of those kind of things. And, you know, you got Uncle Ted who drafts everybody and picks up everybody. So we got that going for us as well. But it makes for some fun stuff there. Before we get going on that, I try to remember most shows over there at Sports Ethos. You still writing the tidbits as the season goes on?
Yep, they're still coming out every Sunday. I was trying to plan out when I need to stop writing about what I'm calling the merit-based ads, because I like to give them a few weeks of to marinate and see how they do. Running out of time, so this is my last weekend upcoming where I'll be recommending starters based on how they've been doing, and until the end of the year I'll just go based on matchups. So
yep, that's all you can do right now. Well, it's kind of like how we were doing the schedule stuff recently, like, hey, these guys, it's literally matchups, the whole point of looking at the schedule. It's like, here we are, this is what we're doing. Like, I know in my Fab column this week, I like to highlight two-star pitchers because everyone likes to try to take advantage of those, but a lot of my favorite abs, like Albert Suarez versus Colorado, versus the White Sox. We'll see how that works. That's a Wednesday start. Cade Povich looks pretty good on Tuesday for those that took a chance on that. It's almost like looking at some of just the really good one starts right now are going to have some appeal to you, not just the two-step guys. And so, yes, to what you're doing to the matchup-based situations there, that's going to be something to definitely keep us going, because those of us that are grinding, especially Ben doing the 15 teamers and, you know, trying to win a main event overall and everything, we got to take advantage of the little things we can find out there to get us home. I won't ask you each week. We'll talk maybe in 2 weeks where the main event stands as the stretch run, but I know you're grinding. So I'm just saying, I know you're grinding on that one.
Yeah. I sent you a sad tweet or a sad text earlier about all the guys I've lost during the last half of the summer, but yeah, that one's, I'm fighting for the league title now. I took too many hits where I didn't run pure enough to stay at the top, but which is fine though. I mean, if I can win my league, that's a big accomplishment in itself. So see what happens. I mean, there is 4 weeks. Maybe my pitching gets hot. Who knows? But like I was telling you, in that league, I started John Gray, and then I checked my phone before we recorded, or my team, and he's on the IL. So I missed out on a start, but it happens. What are you going to do?
Yeah, we were saying before the show, it's just a weird time of the year. Like the news, like say, you know, Justice Steele dropped after the Cubs game locked. So he's locked in your lineup for the week for a zero. That's going to stink. Yu Darvish coming back Wednesday. Who knows? Some people don't like to start guys the first start back. Some do. Who knows? But you're not going to have that option, basically, when all things are said and done. And there's going to be a lot more of that, unfortunately, because like when I update news every night for First Pitch Pod and my Substack, you got like DeGrom literally said he's supposed to have another rehab start Saturday, but he's trying to talk him out of it and just start for the Rangers on Saturday. So that could legit happen. And he might only throw like 65 pitches, so it might not even be worth a start, but you know what I mean? Like there's going to be a lot of that kind of stuff kind of going on. Like Christian Walker came back today. You and I were texting about that earlier today. Ketel Marte expected back in this Giants series. Didn't see him back in Tuesday's lineup. So we'll have to kind of like, do you start him and hope he gets back Wednesday or Thursday? Kyle Tucker, same thing. So many of these situations.
Xavier Edwards is back. We missed that.
Yeah, Xavier Edwards missed that one. So lots of fun, but that's the time of the year we're in, and we're going to have some fun with it. And maybe some guys we could pick up here or that kind of open our eyes to 2025 as well in the same conversation. We're talking about some August standouts here, and we like to try to avoid the captain obvious picks a ton. We'll hit some of them, of course. I'm not going to say we're not going to hit any of them because that's just silly talk. But we're going to look at the August standouts. And for hitters, we're going to look at WRC+. That's just kind of a generic situation there. And then pitchers, will look at just F war because I'm not smart enough to figure out the proper way to you know, do this, that, and the other to make the proper chart for a pitching thing there. But it works for the point of the conversation. So let's start with hitters here, Ben. And we're not going to talk Aaron Judge or Yordan or Vlad with the top three. I almost put Jock Peterson down. So if you want to give a quick thought on Jock, he hit 294, six homers in August. Didn't want to just go super in-depth on Jock because I think we're all impressed with how he's playing this year, but it's the platoon thing, so it's always just it's difficult for fantasy. But, man, when he's healthy and when he's playing, he's been a beast.
He has. I walked into him in Fab in my best main event, so I've had a struggle with the lefties on the schedule for the Diamondbacks, and I have, unfortunately, too many platoon guys on that team, but I'm trying to make it work. And like when you look at the leaders based on WRC Plus for August, Jock is an outlier. He only has 90 plate appearances. The other guys around him have 100 plus. And like you said, like we said, it's because of the lefty platooning, or he sits against lefties. And I guess it maximizes his stats more so as average. So like he's not hurting you because he had 294 in August, which is awesome. And Jock for his season totals has been around like 250 last 2 years. So it's helping him stay as good as possible by sitting against lefties, but it's just you miss out on the extra runs and RBI and maybe homers. And he's not pinch hitting as often as I would like mid game. He's on that main event, so I'm carefully watching him to see how they use him. But yeah, if he could just pinch hit more, it'd be a little bit better. But he definitely has value still when if you don't have a completely weekly lineup setting. If you're like NFBC or daily, where you have a chance to switch him in and out, he's a lot of value.
Yeah, that's true. NFBC with the bi-weeklies, so at least you can kind of try to take advantage of those. I'd say he's almost produced good enough, and maybe he has, maybe it's not even an almost, where he's worthy of just one of your bench spots, so you can fluctuate him in and out throughout the season. He's not just like a weekly stream. Like we're going to talk about Matt Wallner. Jock's been better than Matt, but that's kind of how I play with Matt Wallner on my team. I have him coming in and out a lot in those scenarios. That's interesting. Daily leagues, he's a beast. Absolutely amazing in those formats, as you mentioned as well. All right. Now, here's some fun ones here. It goes William Contreras, 5, naturally. Bobby Witt Jr., but the 7th guy on this list, Tyler Stevenson, Ben, hit 330 in August with 7 homers, 20 runs scored, 19 RBIs, just beasting out like crazy. And, you know, he's only hitting 264 on the year, 18 homers. Big month of August. And, you know, in recent fantasy years, there was high expectations. He got hurt, then some other things took place. He fell a lot this year. He's even on waiver wires at points this year. And now he's starting to produce where some are going to say, this is the guy we thought he'd be. Now, how do you look at Tyler Stevenson from what he did in August and potentially going forward?
Well, I owe Ryan an apology, your co-host, because I jokingly teased him for his Stevenson and Kikuchi picks in the meatball draft. But I think Ryan knew what he was doing because Stevenson hit. He's showing me up right now. He says, you don't think Ryan knows what he's doing often?
I'm just being sarcastic. This is why Ryan are like good buddies. I just don't know.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, this is how it's going to be, I guess, the show. But Stevenson's year-to-date Statcast is actually looking pretty good. Like the average exit velocity is in the red. It's 70th percentile. His barrel rate, 65th percentile. And the thing with me and Stevenson, where I was always hesitant to draft him, was the ground ball rate, and he seems to have kind of kept that in check a little bit. If I look at his fan graphs, well, 47.7%, he was 48.6 last year for the year. So maybe just like when he's elevating the ball, he's hitting it better. So that's a trait that Vlad kind of has, but Vlad's a standout hitter. So I don't know if Stevenson can sustain the elevated ground ball rate and the power. I know we talked about him maybe a month ago or so as someone who was doing pretty well. I think that was July, and here we are in August. He was even better, and catcher's tough right now. Lost Wilson Contreras. Some other guys have underperformed this year. Actually, a lot of guys underperformed, and Stevenson was one of the later ones getting drafted, and he's kind of picked up the slack. I don't expect a high average for him, like 330. He only had one other month so far this year above 260, and that was in May, 268. Otherwise, he was 220s, 240. But just the playing time is, like you said, he plays a lot for the Reds, and it's a good home park. So maybe I need to reconsider where I think he should get drafted next season. Maybe he is a top 200 pick, where in the past he was always past that point. But maybe that's a story for another time, though. But definitely keep starting Stevenson if you have him.
Yeah, for sure. He's locked in for the rest of the year. And I'm with you. Obviously, people know it's like a running joke, but it's actually facts, as I cover catchers every offseason, and I write about way too many catchers. So Stevenson will be someone I definitely dig in on more, because I know I was one of the people a couple of years ago that loved what we saw in a short sample size. We loved the quality of contact and a lot of things with Stevenson. We loved the potential extra playing time, not just a catcher. And then he got hurt, and then it's never really bounced back for about a year and a half. This really never came to be. What we're seeing now, you mentioned the, you know, stat cast, the barrel rates, the hard hit rates. That's the guy we saw a few years ago when he kind of burst onto the scenes. And he's not catching every day, which is a plus. Like, we always point to those kind of players. So I'll have to definitely dig into and look and see if this is somebody that could be, you know, 2 years ago, I was all over William when he wasn't a top pick. And it's because I saw playing time and certain things like this. Now, I'm never going to compare someone probably to William Contreras, at least not anytime soon. But could he be a Yainer Diaz? Could he be a top 5-6 catcher? Maybe. Maybe. That's a reality of the situation if he keeps playing like this. So definitely someone I need to dig into when it comes to Tyler Stevenson. Now, this is where I owe Ryan an apology, and that is O'Neill Cruz, who has actually been healthy in August, which is a plus, because that's been his biggest bugaboo this entire season. It's just staying on the field. But in the month of August, O'Neill Cruz is hitting .389, only one homer, which is, you know, pretty weak, all things considered, but 10 stolen bases with 14 RBIs and 12 runs scored. Very, very effective stuff there from Cruz. He did get banged up at times, still got 107 plate appearances, so you'd hope for more, but a 171 WRC plus in the month of August, pretty impressive, and that was good enough for ninth best. It went Tyler Stevenson, Corbin Carroll, and then O'Neill Cruz, ninth on the list here. So what are your thoughts on Cruz? This is a guy that went high in the meatball draft, I think deservedly so, and he's going to get outfield eligibility potentially next year to top it off to go with shortstop. But when we're looking at what Cruz has done in August, are we believing in what we're seeing here? Because I'd like more power, but maybe I'm just being greedy.
No, you're not being greedy. It's one is very surprising considering how high his WRC plus was, which is how we're sorting this list. And a couple things stand out to me. So the first one is the BABIP. He had a 514 BABIP in August. So that explains the 389 average. The K rate wasn't bad, 23.4%. That actually, so without looking, knowing what the percentage is for the other months, it seems like he cut his K rate down in the month because he was around 30 yep. or even higher in the other 4 months to start the season. And then Cruz, so he also walked 10 times in August, which is the most for any month this year. He had 8 in May, but he bested that. And yeah, so he's still been productive for fantasy, just in a very skewed way. I mean, no one's going to complain about 10 steals. He probably will not, but the 10 steals, he's kind of caught up to where people were hoping him to be. He's almost 20-20 now. He's 18 homers, 20 steals in the year. And like Cruz's stat cast is all mostly red, except for the K rate and the whiff rate, which we all know. It's just, can he overcome that with his athleticism and how hard he hits the ball? And he's 99th percentile in average exit velo, 97th in barrel for the year. So he's overcoming it for sure. It's just, I don't know. It's definitely a weird month, but it's still productive, like I said. And he's kind of been overwhelming, I guess, for only being 18 homers. He has more power than that. So I'm not sure where he's gone wrong. I don't know if he has let me check his ground ball rate. He has a 46.5%, which isn't awful. I mean, it's kind of close to Stevenson's, actually. I guess you'd rather have it closer to 40%. So with that power, you kind of want to hit it in the air more. So if he can fix that, then he could have a huge breakout year going into next year. But I wonder how the outfield transition will help. I mean, it's definitely an easier position, I'd have to say, to play center field. I mean, you have to cover a lot of ground, but it's definitely easier to play the outfield. And I don't know, we'll see. Do you know where remember where he went in the draft, Cruz?
I got the picture right here. I want to say it was round 3 to Venancio, but just give me a second and I can zoom in because I'm old and need to see this bigger.
Yeah, those glasses.
Yeah, there you go. He went late round 5, actually. No, that's Garrett Cole. See, this is where the glass – there he is, round 3. It was round 3, like I thought. Round 3, pick 12 to Ryan Venancio.
Okay, so pick like 42-ish. Yep. That's not bad. I mean, he's Ryan's archetype of player that he likes, so I get that. And
Venancio has been O'Neill Cruz to the day he dies since he's been called up. Yes, that's his boy.
Yeah, him and Ellie are, and I've tweeted about Ellie, and I've heard from Ryan about Ellie, so I know that one as well. yeah, so Cruz, definitely a good year. It's just, I don't know, like, it's still good. It's just weird how he's been, the power's not really there. You kind of hope for 30 homers. He really has to go on a hot streak to hit there. But I don't know if he's actually going to, only 61 runs, 68 RBI. So he really has to have a big month to kind of justify where he was even going this year. Because I know he got pushed up. People were all excited for him in spring training. So third's expecting that that breakout to come, which we were hoping for this year. It didn't really hit. So I don't know. We'll wait and see what happens with more drafts.
As Michael C. in the chat says, second half Cruz, he's hitting 325, slugging 523, but only four home runs for a 199 ISO. Like, you'd expect a lot more power from Cruz. Maybe there's another injury there that's affecting the lift of the ball. Who knows on all those type of situations there. But he's going to be a fun discussion in the offseason because I think we know the ceiling for an O'Neill Cruz is pretty darn high. The floor we also know is pretty low because the strikeout rate can get crazy and he just get hurt. He's shown the propensity to get hurt. So that's always a concern. But the ceiling is worthy of a top pick. It's just, do you want to take that risk, reward? Like, do you take a Royce Lewis or an O'Neill Cruz? I go Royce Lewis. Maybe it's not as close as that. But they're going, like, obviously, they both went round three. So that's something to think about going forward. All right, as we go farther down the list here, it goes, right below him, Matt Wallner comes in at number 10. They both had 171 WRC pluses, hitting 273 in August with four homers, 13 runs, 14 RBIs, three stolen bases. Still strikes out a lot, doesn't play every game versus lefties, but playing more often. So that's why I compared him to Jock. He's a lot like Jock when you're looking at the platoon situations. Jock's been better, not going to deny that at all. But what's your thoughts on Matt Wallner? Because I think he's done enough to warrant some fantasy appeal for sure.
And Ryan's the one who's been skeptical about Wallner, right?
Ryan, it gives me a hard time about Wallner all the time, yes.
Okay, yeah, I
am on your side. He compares him to Joey Gallo, who went deep on Tuesday night, by the way. Joey Gallo did six of the year.
I think Wallner's better than Gallo. Yes, I don't think he strikes out as much. He actually steals. Wallner had a two steal week back in week 21. I don't think Gallo really does that often. But I get the comp because of the quality of contact and then the K rate. Ironically enough, so I told you I have a lot of platoon bats on that main event team. I also have Wallner on that team too. So it's a constant carousel. But yeah, so looking at the month of August, four homers only, but like we said, he's not playing full time. He has started at least, I think it was the last two lefties, the Twins face, I think he started. Yeah. So I'm less hesitant to sit Wallner if there's a lefty. He just gets moved down to in the lineup. So, well, of course, I said that he's sitting tonight. But last Wednesday, he batted eighth. So he's usually third or fourth in the Twins lineup, Wallner, and then versus a righty, and then versus a lefty, he'll move down or sit. So it's kind of like what was happening to Max Kepler. Kepler was kind of playing sitting most of the time versus lefties, but then he started starting some. So it's bearable, I'll say that. And with Wallner, if he had qualified, he'd be right up there with O'Neill Cruz's hard hit metrics for the season. He 93.7 miles per hour average exit velocity, 22.7% barrel rate. His hard hit is 54.5%. Of course, his K rate's 36% on the season, which is terrible, but I think it's getting better. It seems like it's getting better. I don't have the percentages to back it up, but he manages. It's just you want to try to save your average at this point in the season if you're competing in average. And trust me, it's amazing how tight some of these stats are, whether it's average or runs or, of course, like homers and steals will be tight, but even the other counting stats, it's crazy. So you don't want to slip up anywhere, but he could just catch fire over these last 4 weeks, Wallner, and kind of just – say, okay, I'll hit 250 and give you eight homers, and then he's a great play. So if Wallner's available, I would definitely add him, especially in a daily league. Like I said, you can make if he does sit, you can just take him out of your lineup. And even against a lefty, he might even produce. So he's not a guaranteed sit in fantasy if he's facing a lefty, I don't think.
Yep, no, I'm with you. That's why I pretty much just plug and play unless I have some other options. In the month of August, fifth in barrel percentage for Matt Wallner. Michael C. in the chat here saying top four in barrel percentage of the second half, Judge, Soto, Wallner, Otani. It's pretty good company, all things considered. So I've always argued, yes, he does strike out a bit too much, but when he does make contact, it's big boy contact. And in the world of fantasy I'm in right now, I need home runs. So we're going to play with big boy contact and see what we can do in those conversations. So I'm a Matt Wallner fan. I know a lot of people, like in DCs especially, were taking Wallner this year. Obviously did not start out well, spent some time in AAA. But he's been taking full advantage of it since he got recalled. All right, 11th is Durand, then David Peralta stuck in there at 12th. Didn't want to talk about him on back-to-back weeks, but that's pretty impressive. Willy Adames, 13th. J.J. Bleda comes in at 14. I just wanted to highlight this. Dude's hitting 289, seven homers, stolen base. He's hitting second pretty much every day. Righties, lefties, does not matter for J.J. Bleda. Are we believing in this, Ben? Like, I know the argument everyone's going to make is, oh, the A's are going to go to this awesome ballpark to hit it in Sacramento. And that's true. No denying that. But Bleda's been a guy that there's always been, like, kind of higher expectations on. It's never panned out. Are we believing this now?
I think so. But I think he's a 15-team play. Because, like, you look at his stat line for the year. Bleda has 68 runs, which is good. 20 homers, which is good. 54 RBIs. A little low. Just one steal and a 240 average. So that's all okay numbers. That'll play in a DC, like you mentioned earlier with Wallner, just one of those kind of picks. And but like you said, if they do move to Sacramento next year, the A's, he'll get a huge boost there. And he's only 27. Or actually, he's going to be 27. Hey, we had the same birthday, actually, with that. So he's going to be 27 in November, Bleda. And he's by far no means old. Look at Durand, he's 27 and he's breaking out this year. So it's definitely in the cards for Bleda to do even better next year. Because like I think you said, he never really got a full chance with the Marlins. And now he's kind of getting full-time plate appearances with the A's, of course, because they have no one else better. And he's doing well. He's not like taking anything by storm. I gave the numbers, so he's doing okay. But in a 12, he's more like a matchup stream play if they're loaded against righties. But if he is playing against lefties, actually the splits aren't even that bad. He's a higher OPS in the year versus lefties, so it doesn't even matter. So the A's see that, I'm sure. So in a good matchup, stream Bleda, and just going into next year, just don't get too well. I guess with the Sacramento boost, people are going to see that though, and he'll probably move up in ADP. Most A's hitters will, I'm sure. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, he's a solid bat. Just I think he's more of a deeper league play.
Yeah, Butler and Rooker both went in the top 11. Rounds of the meatball draft, which I'm not completely against that, honestly, but we're going to see a lot more guys moved up. I'm really curious, the guys like Geloff off of down season, yeah. Where does that argument come into play?
Again, Trevor Story, maybe that's a comp for him or something.
Yep. So there's some fun stuff to discuss there, but hey, it's been fun. Been fun to see. Now, whenever we do these recaps of the month, Ben, there's always a name or two where you're just like, what? Really? And this is coming from two gentlemen that spend a lot of time, some may say too much time, going over stats and teams and players and whatnot. And somehow this one still slipped past me. I'll tell you that much. So after J.D. Bleda goes Alex Bregman, even with his elbow issue, still 15th, which is impressive. Corey Seager at 16. And then coming in at number 17, Ben, Andrew Benintendi of the Chicago White Sox. The 164 WRC plus. He hit 278 in August with seven home runs, a stolen base, 15 runs scored, and 17 RBIs. This is bonkers stuff, Ben, because obviously he was available on the waiver wire for a buck. Gonna throw that out there. Just I'm gonna say obviously because I'm pretty sure. But he has produced, and some teams would be benefiting a lot if they took the chance on him right now. I just still won't take the chance on him. But what's your thoughts on what we've seen from Benintendi? Because this is a whole new ball player that we have not seen in a couple of years, it feels like.
Yeah, so he has 15 homers on the year, which is mind-blowing for me when I saw that total. He had five the last 2 years in full seasons. Last time he came close to this was 2021, 17 homers that year. But the one thing with Benintendi, though, he's supposed to be like a safe average guy. He is hitting 218 this year, so this makes no sense. And so he had that four-homer week to start the month. I think it was the second week of the month, and I'm sure most people missed that because I remember when I was doing Fab for week 21, the week after that four homer week, I was like, there's no way I'm falling for this. I'm not adding Benintendi. And then he had two homers last week, but a 364 average. So I don't know. It's just, he's 30. So he's not completely like at an age where he should be done, but on the White Sox, it's just such a bad environment for him to be a productive fantasy player. And I just don't trust the skills. Like the Statcast, the only good things on a Statcast are the strikeout and like chase percentage and things like that, the play discipline metrics. Everything else though is blue like we would expect, and it's just interesting to see a name like this is what's fun about short small samples is that you never know what's going to happen. And yep. Benintendi is a good example of that.
Yeah, and that's why I love, like you said, you never know what's going to happen on small samples. This is why I love looking at like streaky hitters, stream them, see what you got. Like I always use the term that some people hate is You add them, you drop them. It makes it an easy drop. Like, you just ride them till the wheels fall off, and you drop them. Just do your thing. I think majority of us would feel the same way you and I did, where there's no way. Like, this is happening. Like, he got hot for 1 week. Like, we're going to move on. There's no way. If he does this again in September, I'm going to be just baffled. Not meaning I'm going to draft him next year, but curiosity will arise. I'll tell you that much. It'll definitely arise, at least for like a DC, because he'll still be late in drafts where that becomes interesting.
I was going to say, so would you take Benintendi in a DC next year?
If he has another good September, because you could still get him as probably like your fifth, sixth outfielder easy. And
hopefully, I would hope like more like seventh or eighth, maybe.
Yeah, like the good thing about him, and one thing about, you know, we love in DCs is no matter what, I shouldn't say no matter what, more often than not, he's going to play every game. That team's going to be so bad. Like, they're paying him, for them, a lot of money. Like, he's going to play every day. So that's valuable enough just in general in a DC. So yeah, I'd be interested. Like, that's why I have a lot of JJ Bleday in DCs. That's been an easy one because I knew he'd at least play every day on Oakland. Like, let's give it a shot. Did I expect this? No. I'm not trying to say that, but when I'm looking, that's why everyone like Jason Hayward, because he was going to play every day, stuff like that. Benintendi falls into that mold. It would be very, very intriguing for sure. Right, a couple more hitters here before we switch to the mound. After Benintendi, went Jackson Merrill, obviously. Austin Wells, of course. Lindor, I figured, would be higher than 20th. Jake Berger, 21st. Machado Soto's down to 23 because he's had a bad week last week. Jackson Churio just went deep again on Tuesday night. He's at 24. Let's talk about Luis Garcia Jr. coming in at 25. I know when he was drafted in the meatball draft, some were kind of like, whoa. And then you sit back and look at him. He's had a great year. I've been a big Garcia fan. He hits cleanup more often than not for the Washington Nationals. Hit 341 in August with four homers, six steals. Does weirdly get platoon still, which I just can't wrap my head around why in Washington, but here we are. But I think the skill set's great for Garcia. So what's your thoughts on a big August and a really good season in general for Luis Garcia Jr.?
He stood out in the meatball draft because of, I don't think where he went was wrong, but because of how bad second base is for next year, at least how it seems like at this point. And assuming it stays the same way, perception wise, I will try to get a lot of Luis Garcia around pick 100 or wherever he went, like the ninth round. So it's close to like the 130s.
Yep.
And the 15. And so I was looking at his, I have a Statcast pulled up, and Luis Garcia actually isn't that fast, but he's just he's taking advantage of the Nats green light because he has 21 steals, but only a 47th percentile sprint speed, which is fine. I mean, it's all relative to league average. Like 47th percentile could still be fast enough to steal bases. Who knows? But he's been almost almost a 290 hitter on the year, almost 2020. And as long as he keeps hitting fourth, the counting stats, like the runs, for example, they're only 49 this year. But if he bats that high in the lineup all next year, they don't have a bad lineup, the Nationals. They have a lot of good young players. They'll have Cruz, Wood, him being Garcia, and I'm sure I'm missing some other young players that are good. But they'll have a solid lineup, and if Garcia's hitting at the top, I'm going to be very interested in him. And, yeah, I've been playing him in my DC. I ended up adding him in a Fab League when someone dropped him, and I just hope he continues to do just as well rest of the year, but maybe not too well. I don't want his price to be too high because we don't want the inflation to get too out of hand. But the way second base looks, like I said, I think I'll be targeting Garcia a lot next year.
Yep, I'm with you as well. I'm a big fan of what we're seeing here. So, a big September finish. The ADP will get interesting, especially with the second base issues. Like, the fun question I can already see myself writing about in the offseason is like an Ozzie Albies versus Luis Garcia Jr., especially based on their ADP differences. Like, that's a fun question right there. And that's the kind of stuff I like to look at in drafts. But again, we'll get there in due time. All right, the last hitter I wanted to mention right here. And after Garcia at 25, it goes Brent Rooker at 26. I want to mention Parker Meadows at 27. He hit 322 in August with two homers and five steals. Didn't play a ton out the gate, kind of platooned. But from about the middle of the month on, was playing pretty much every day, leading off in center field for Detroit. He finished August with a 10-game hitting streak, which is outstanding. So what's your thoughts on Parker Meadows? Because this is a guy that we've been waiting to see it, and August gave us a good glimpse of what could be coming from this young ball player.
Yep, I agree. And I feel bad for everyone who was so in on Meadows and pushing my draft boards because he was one of definitely a riser, at least in the main event season. He was around pick 200 by the time all things were done, I think. And he didn't start out there in DC season. But so he's on pace for like a 30 steal year, five steals in August. And if he can go 10-30 with a close to 300 average and he's hitting leadoff, that's kind of it's Jaren Duran-esque with less power. Yes. Yep. And so it's good to see him finally getting things straightened out. He's only 24 right now, Parker. So he's ready to take off, and it'll be cool to see where he goes in drafts, because he might be forgotten because of the lost first half of the year. But in terms of the rest of the season, he has to keep playing him. This is a type of pick that really can change the standings. Hopefully the power is a little bit better, because two homers per month isn't terrible, but for fantasy purposes, it'd be nice to maybe get like four per month, go like 20-20, and that'd be really nice. But I can't complain with what he did in August. And I missed out. I don't have medals anywhere, so I was blind to how well he did. And it's good to see him bounce back after struggling so badly in April.
Yep, I'm with you. It's been real good to see, because when he got recalled after the struggles, he gets hurt like the second game in, and that was a bummer. But since he's come back, they gave him the job again, and he's ran with it literally. So it's been great to see. All right, we're going to head to the mound, and we're going to go off of a Fangraphs war to talk over some of these top options here for the month of August. We're not going to talk Chris Sale, Zach Wheeler, Blake Snell, top three guys. Framber Valdez, number four. We will talk about number five, though, and that is one Bowden Francis, who's been amazing for the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's fun to see, because in spring training, Ben, everyone's thinking, okay, Francis is going to be the fifth guy. He's worth the late pick. All these things did not pan out, not even close to panning out. Looked like it was a complete wasted season. Well, it's amazing what young kids can do when they go and work on things and change up pitch mixes and whatnot. Francis came back in August and made five starts for the Jays and one other, a third of an inning appearance. So five starts for the Jays, 34 and a third innings, four earned runs with 39 strikeouts. What's your thoughts on Bowden Francis? Because he did it at Boston, which is not easy. Cubs have been a hot offense. Baltimore, the Baltimore start. Two Angel starts help. There's no denying that, but overall, getting the job done.
Yeah, he's been kind of puzzling for me. I did write him up as an ad for the two-star week in my Sports Ethos article. I did not prioritize him enough, so I didn't get him anywhere for that two-star week, which hurts, because I was in on it. I just had other guys who I trusted more, and that was because of how bad Francis was to start the year. I think I added him in a main event or something. I had him on at least one of my fab teams, Francis, to start the season. I had to drop him when he got sent down. So I was kind of stung by that already. And I didn't really – I wanted this – I mean, this is the dilemma we always have, at least in NFBC, where it's so competitive, is you can't really wait and see sometimes with these guys. You kind of have to take a leap of faith and add him and wait and see what happens. That's kind of how Francis is right now, because he's just been on fire. He's had whips below five – in his 0.5 in his last four starts, and if you include the one before that, it was 0.8. So he's been completely changing ratios for fantasy leagues for whoever added him. The thing, though, and this is why I can't get behind, like, I'm waiting for the blow up, is because over in the month of August, Francis, where is he? He had a 0.099 BABIP against and a 92.6% left on base percentage. So I'm just waiting for something bad to go wrong to happen to him. But the thing, too, at the same time, is that his K per nine was 10.22% or 10.22 Ks per nine, and he only walked one per nine. So that's what's shown here. I would do percentage otherwise, but either way, those are great numbers. So he's pitched like as well as you can pitch, but he's also been as lucky as you can get, too. So I don't know what's going to happen in these next 4 weeks, and maybe he just stays as hot and he continues to dominate, and you maybe win your league because of Francis, but I don't have up my tool right now. I'm going to pull it up because I really want to see where his projected matchups are. I got it open right now. All right. So he is projected for the Mets on 9/10, who over the last 30 days when I ran this, they had a 107.2 WRC plus versus righties, then Texas, then Tampa. So the last two matchups or seem favorable, because Texas has been a below average offense and the Rays have been bad. So if Francis can survive the Mets start, I think he's got to play him the rest of the season, but that's not projecting for week 27. He should have a start that week. I'd assume I took this from RotoWire. So maybe they didn't have the probables in there yet, but he probably has four more starts left, Francis. And based on that, I think he's a start most of the time, because the Mets, they can hurt you, but the way how he's pitching, Francis, I think you just got to play him. But like I said, the luck metrics have been so off the charts in his favor that he could have a blow up start. But the way he's pitching though, too, at the same time, it's maybe he's not pitching that poorly where he's gonna allow that to happen. But it's just so hard to say when you see numbers like that. So he's been tricky for me, and I said a lot there, so I'll stop talking.
No, he's a tough one. I'm glad you said it, because I've dug in on him a few times and even writing him up for FAD the last few weeks. And it's like, yeah, he's pitched great. You mentioned the underlying metrics, not encouraging, I guess is the right word, but he continues to outpitch those metrics, which we see guys do a lot. Like there's a handful of guys that have done that all season and just make you shake your head. And Bowden Francis did change up his pitch mix, which is correlated with some of the success. So maybe there's more to it in that regard. So I keep running them out there, like you said. Just be aware that might be a rocky one from here to there and see how that one goes. All right, after Francis, you got Scooble. And number seven on the list, I hope Ryan's listening loud and clear right now, Osvaldo Beto is on the list here. And yes, he wasn't at his best on Monday at the beginning of the two-step. I know, I got a text reminding me about that. Don't you guys worry. But he did, you know, still go six. No, they don't have it updated on here yet, because he gave up four in runs, but got a no decision. Didn't get crushed. In the month of August, though, Beto threw five starts, five earned runs on 28, nine innings pitched with 28 strikeouts, only nine walks. It's always been a big concern with Osvaldo is the walk department. He's improved there. Strikeouts have gotten better. He's attacking the zone a lot more. So I've preached a ton about my thoughts on Osvaldo Beto over the last month. What's your thoughts, though? Because it was a great month of August. Maybe he's more of what we saw on Monday. That's fair. I'm not going to just discount that, but I think he's also better than he was like a year ago.
So I actually wrote up Beto with Francis in that same week. So I, of course, though, I didn't get Beto. I didn't trust it enough where I still had bids in for Beto. I didn't have him high enough. I really want to know who I ended up adding that week, because hopefully whoever was did well. So looking at Beto, though, he only allowed 14 hits in those 29 innings in August. And when you look at the BABIP for the month, he was kind of like Francis, but lesser extent. He had a 197 BABIP against allowed Beto. The left on base was right in line, though, 75%, which is basically league average. And the other thing, though, with Beto, which I wasn't really aware of, is that he only had a 31.4% ground ball rate. So that means his fly ball rate was probably around 50, had to have been, give or take 20 is like roughly the average line drive rate for pitchers, I think, and hitters. But Beto, though, like he's a solid pitcher. And we were talking about with Blade, though, earlier. It's the opposite. So get all you can from Beto now, because next year it'll probably be ugly if the move to Sacramento happens. That's especially as a flyball pitcher like Beto seems to be. But and in that month, though, too, so as well as he pitched, his xFIP was 4.12. And I think that has to do with the flyball rate. I'm sure the FIP was even better, though. So he got lucky with the homers. He didn't allow a homer at all. And he had a 50% roughly flyball percentage. So it's just one of those things where you get lucky with the right ads. I think he had good matchups, Beto, and he took advantage of them. And so if you were brave enough to take the plunge, and I definitely know that you did. I'm sure it's worked out for you pretty well. And let me pull up Beto's in the tool that I have here, because I'm curious to know what he has.
The White Sox next week. Another good start this weekend. So I know that those are the ones I was really looking forward to. I'm curious, what else has he got for us?
Okay, so this is for the looking at not this week, but the weeks after. We have the White Sox, week 25. Then the Cubs, who've actually been surprisingly hitting very well lately. Yeah. He's in Wrigley there too. So maybe that's a sit, especially as a flyball pitcher. And then he's home versus the Rangers in week 27.
He might just be a drop after the White Sox start.
Yeah, honestly, just take the good ratios and then run.
Yep, because if you're just going to sit them, there's no reason to not drop them. They're literally for the last 2 weeks of the year. Like Osvaldo, it's been real, but we might, you know, we'll cheers after the White Sox start, hopefully, and call it a day. Like that's how it's going to go. It's business. It's not personal.
No. Yeah, I mean, like with Martin Perez, he was good for that three start stretch, and then I kept playing him a little bit, like. This hope, because like the matchups are just good enough, but he's not as good enough pitcher though to overcome the mediocre matchups. Perez, I mean, I think Beto's a better pitcher right now based on the K and the walk numbers, but he does have his flaws like Perez does. So it's just another example where don't get too greedy and just take what they've given you and then move on to the next hot pitcher.
Yep, no doubt about it. Let's keep moving down the list here. After Beto, it goes Gilbert, Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrighetti, which is Yusei Kikuchi, so three Astros, 9, 10, and 11. That's fun. Spencer Schwellenbach at 12, Justin Steele 13, Eovaldi 14, Coming in at number 15, this just melts my heart because I've pounded this drum for a few months now. DJ Hers. DJ Hers, he's always had really good underlying, you know, ERA indicators and all that fun stuff. K to walk is great. In August, he made 6 starts, only 1 win, unfortunately. 10 runs in 29 innings pitched, 35 Ks, 3.10 ERA, 3.92 CR. So that flipped compared to early on, 17.1% K to walk. That dropped, but we actually saw more consistent quality starts per se, not actually quality because he wasn't going more than 5 in most outings. But he pitched good enough, obviously, to get the WAR, so it brings him up the conversation here. He needs to improve the walk rate some more still to be super effective. But, man, it's like it's right there, and I'm thinking next year could be a fun year for Hers. But what's your thoughts when you look at DJ Hers?
Yeah, it's high, the walk rate, but it's not terrible because despite having an 8.6 walk rate on the year, he has a 20.4% K-minus walk, and that's really good. Whenever you get around 20, as I'm sure most listeners know, that's really what you're looking for. And let's see what the swinging strike rate is. 13.1%, so that's pretty good. It's kind of is in line with his K rate, which is 28.6, I believe, for the season. And but yeah, in August he almost had a walk every 2 innings, which is definitely rough. He got away with a low BABIP. He had a 117 WHIP. Despite that, he only had 20 hits allowed. Only 1 homer though, so that's good to see. He's keeping the ball in the ballpark. His fly ball rate against is 43%, so a little high. That's at least for the year. And but the estimators are all in check. 3.38 xERA on the year, 3.64 xFIP. His Sierra is 3.54. So that everything likes him from a skill standpoint. And I know he's had some rough patches. I didn't add Hers anywhere, but I know he had a couple blowups, at least the one to start his career. I think he kind of had a rough one. But great. He's interesting. He's kind of one of the the Spencers, the Schwellenbach and Arrighetti with the high K rates. But it's just it's good to look at the walk rate in September and see if he improves, because he only had 7 in June and 5 in July. Granted, fewer innings than August, but not many, not a lot fewer innings. It was definitely better rates in those months for his walk rate. But yeah, I like him as a going to next season for sure. I was waiting. He might get slept on Hers because of the Nationals aren't as big of a team. Like with the other Spencers, like they're on the Braves and the Astros. We said the Nationals will be good, but they're not going to be a highly talked about team. And Hers, hopefully he makes a rotation. I don't get why they wouldn't have him pitch. He's young. He's 23, so he's really young. And I think they've had him up for this long now, so I don't see why they would not give him a chance next year.
Yep, I'm with you 110% on that one. A couple more here. Bryce Miller's at 16. Michael Wacha checks in at 17. This is just more a nod to the veteran out there, the old man, 33-year-old, not even that old, which is crazy. Like when I think Michael Wacha, I'm thinking like the old Chris Carpenter days or Adam Wainwright, like he's been here forever. Wacha's not that old, and he's just boring. He's a very boring pitcher, but he goes out there and just gives you in real life, he's a very good pitcher. Maybe in fantasy it's tricky, but that's why this is a fun discussion. Top 20 in F4. He 31 innings pitched over 5 innings, picked up 3 wins in those 5 starts, which is big. He went at least 6 innings in all 5 starts, 2 earned runs or less in 4 out of 5 starts, 29 Ks in 31 innings. That's some big boy fantasy stuff, especially in deeper formats, Ben. So what's your thoughts on Michael Wacha? This is a guy that just continues to get the job done and not get crushed, basically.
So I went to look at his splits, but I stopped because I was looking at his career, his year-by-year totals. He had a 3.32 ERA in 2022, a 1.12 WHIP. Then he had a 3.22 ERA and a 1.16 WHIP in 2023. And now he's a 3.50 ERA and a 1.21 WHIP in 2024. I would not have assumed that's how good he's pitched the last 3 years. And that's a good sample. That's a 127 innings, 134, now 144 this year. So he's pitching pretty far into the season. He's doing really well. So I have to give him a lot more credit. And with K numbers that aren't going to hurt you, he had 124 last year, 123 this year. So he's not a K per inning guy, but he's doing just enough. And with those ratios, he's very helpful and he's getting wins. He was on the Red Sox, the Padres, and this year the Royals are good. So he has 11 wins. And I'll draft Wacha next year. He'll be terrible, but he's just, he's one of those boring vets. Not much more to say, just that I didn't realize how well he's been pitching. And good for anyone who drafted him as a quote unquote safe starter. And I'm sure he's helped you do well in your league so far.
Yep, I'm with you. He's a just a boring, steady Eddie that doesn't crush you. And yeah, even the strikeouts are there to not like just be a complete drain on that stat. So, and the Royals are winning games. It's always a plus when we're talking this one. Let's go to the Baltimore Orioles side of things here, because after Waka goes Shamanai, who's been amazing, Garrett Cole at 19. Dean Kramer checks in at number 20. And kind of like the Benintendi thing, like I knew Kramer's like not a bad pitcher, but I didn't expect him to be top 20 in Fangraphs WAR for the month of August type pitcher. Kramer made 6 starts, picked up 2 wins over those 6 starts, allowed 18 runs in 30 and 2/3. That's a 5.28 ERA, Ben. 5.28 ERA in August. That's right. I'm still getting confused here. Had a 5 Sierra on the month, had an 8.1% K to walk. So can you explain to me where this F4 is coming from? Because I am beyond baffled from what we're seeing in this Dean Kramer situation.
Yeah, I could not tell you. I am not – one thing I'm not well-versed in is how WAR is calculated, especially for a pitcher.
Yeah,
but, true, yeah, fair. So I'm looking at the underlying stats, and nothing really stands out. Like, he had pretty poor walk and K rate. He had – his FIP was good. It was 3.37, but his XFIP was 5. So he I don't know. This is a weird one. Maybe we need Baseball Reference WAR next time.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, maybe we'll mix it up. Because, yeah, I saw that. I was like, let's see what this is all about. And oopsie. Because the next guy I had is his teammate, Albert Suarez, who's number 21 on the list. This checked out to me. He made 5 starts, picked up 2 wins, 7 earned over 32 innings, 25 Ks. He had a 1.97 ERA. When you look at Sierra, it was 4.12, which you kind of would expect from Suarez. 1.97's a bit low, but much more, you know, serviceable Albert Suarez production. And he's a guy, I'm 100% honest, I've written off Suarez many times, just thinking like this is a lot of smoke and mirrors type stuff to me. And he keeps getting the job done for the most part. And then I was all excited about the White Sox start coming up on Wednesday. So let's hope that doesn't disappoint. But what's your thoughts on what we've seen from Albert Suarez, who had a very strong August? With all the injuries in Baltimore, it looks like he's locked into that rotation for the time being.
I think he is too. And I did add Suarez when he came back into the rotation on a handful of teams. But I forget if I said this already here. So he's kind of been in the same – I've had the same dilemma with Suarez as I had with Francis on my one team. And it's being hesitant to start Suarez because of the matchup. So I think I played him against the Rays, or I had him after the Rays start. But then he had the Red Sox, the Astros, and then he was in Coors. So on paper, those are 3 pretty awful matchups, but he survived all 3. And if you include the Rays, all 4. The Rays have been bad though lately, so I would have started him there no matter what. I did take a plunge on the Coors start in a league, and that paid off. And so I remember looking at Suarez's pitch arsenal to see, okay, because we know with Coors, breaking pitches move less because of the altitude. So I want to see what he relies on. And he's very fastball heavy. And I think he had like a cutter. He has his main pitches, Suarez, were those that don't really require a lot of movement. So I said, okay, well, let's give it a whirl because the Rockies are just so bad. And let me bring it up. So he has a cutter and a four seamer, which he throws most of the time, then a changeup. So the cutter moves, but not a lot. So his 3 main pitches don't really require a lot of movement to be effective. So I figured, okay, let's roll the dice in Coors. And it worked out. I mean, so I was glad I don't know if that's why it worked out, but it felt good to get that right with that thinking behind it. But with Suarez, let's go to the underlying stats. He has a high left on base rate for the month, 90.6%, which definitely elevated. 272 BABIP, which is fine. It's on the low side, but it's not awful. And the 3.40 WHIP or FIP is good, and then the 4.03 XFIP is fine. So I think he benefits from the team he pitches for, Suarez, and the home park. So I think kind of like the other guys we mentioned earlier, Francis and maybe Beto, we kind of said a jump ship on Beto, but with Francis and Suarez, I think just roll them out for now, and maybe they finish the year on a hot streak, but then reassess next year about how much you really trust the skills. So hopefully, let me check out Suarez's matchups, because this definitely applies to me. Like you mentioned, he has the White Sox this week. That's not going to work. Let me get this up. He gets the Giants and then the Tigers. So I think Suarez, he gets the Red Sox, Giants, Tigers. He's in Boston, so maybe sit him for the Boston series. But then I would start Suarez versus the Giants and the Tigers, I think.
Yep.
And that's a 2-start week, actually, week 26. So, yeah, that could be a very good week for Suarez.
Yeah, no, that's a lock and load going forward. So definitely good to know for the time being, even if people see that Boston start next week, you probably slip them through for a buck and just sit them and use them for the two-step the following week, because anybody with money will be throwing like $4 or $5 out there to get them for that two-step at that point in time. So get them for a buck next week and see where it goes. Last guy I want to talk about here is just more highlighting a player. You got Brian Wu at 22, Skeens, Webb, Rodon. Coming in at 26, Cody Bradford. Now, this is just fun for me because Bradford was really great to start the season, gets hurt, out for a long period of time. The Rangers even said, hey, we just want him in the bullpen, build his arm up for 2025. All the injuries take place in Texas. Bradford comes right back to the rotation, and he's flourished yet again. Made 6 starts in August, through 34 and two-thirds innings, 12 earned runs, 33 strikeouts, a really nice 20.6% K to walk and a 3.65 Sierra. So love what we're seeing from Bradford. Now, DeGrom's either back this weekend or next week potentially. Scherzer starts a rehab assignment on Sunday. So there are reinforcements coming, but they just lost John Gray, as you said at the top of the show. Tyler Molly's probably not pitching again this year, they said. Bradford could stick the rest of the way is what it comes down to. So what's your thoughts on what we saw in August? Because he kind of he's picking up where he left off to start the season.
Yeah, I think it's awesome for Bradford that he did this well coming back from I forget what his injury was, but I remember it being kind of fluky, it seemed like. And so on the year to date, all his estimators are are under 4, his ERA estimators, and his Sierra, hopefully. Yep, his Sierra is under 4 as well, 3.75. He has a great walk rate, only 3.7% on the year. So I like Bradford. And but we alluded to, the Rangers don't have the best offense right now. So I don't know how good the wins are going to be. They're beat up and not really playing for much. But doing the same exercise as we've been doing before. So next week, Bradford gets the Mariners, who have been bad against lefties lately. Then he gets the Blue Jays, who have been hot, but not so much against lefties. And then he gets the A's, who have been not the best against lefties, at least recently. So I think Bradford has, according to the most recent WRC Plus numbers for the last 30 days, and this is mostly actually August, he's a start for the next 3 weeks, Bradford. And I have him in a DC, so I'll probably play him there, but I missed out in Fab, unfortunately. But if you got Bradford, or if he's still available, I consider a stream over the next few weeks.
Yep, that's good to know, because I do not have any Bradford either, which is a big-time bummer, to say the least. So, fun little exercise there. Again, like we've pretty much done every month, is going over the previous months. Usually we use the Player Rater, but decided something different this time. Maybe I should have stuck with the Player Rater. We'll see. But it was fun to kind of get a couple names out there that really stood out in a big, big way. All right, Ben, let's get to recapping the week 24 Fab, which was a fun one. Prices all over the place because some people don't have money, some do. As usual, folks, we recap the NFBCOC 12-team leagues, because most people play 10 and 12-team leagues on multiple platforms. Ben plays a lot of 15s also. I play a few. So we'll give some info on a couple players here. We won't go super deep because a lot of it's definitely team-dependent stuff. We'll talk about a handful of guys here before recapping our ads and drops as usual. And the top ad of the week, Ben, and this is to the surprise of no one, was Dylan Cruz. He was called up last Sunday. He was added in 1OC because someone drafted him and dropped him. Not available anywhere else until this past Sunday. So Dylan Cruz was added in 204 OCs, as high as 210. I'm envious of that kind of money. As low as $1, because OCs are undefeated in that regard. Dylan Cruz, fun stuff here. He's hitting 233, 2 homers, 2 steals, was a power speed beast in the minors, at least speed for sure. What's your thought on the Cruz situation?
I wish I had more money, because I did not even – I kind of forgot about Cruz because I haven't been in the money or the running for a player of his caliber lately in Fab. But looking at his minor league numbers, you said he went 13-25 homers and steals in the minors this year. 270 average, and he has hit leadoff every game for the Nationals. So he is definitely getting the plate appearances, at least the last 5 games. He's bet leadoff Cruz. And just run him out there. And if he starts slumping, then you take him out. But if you were able to add Cruz, I think you got to play him for now. So what do you think happens for him next year, Cruz? You think it depends on how he does in September?
Oh, he's starting up with a big club.
In terms of ADP, probably.
Oh, he went in too early. Let me find it real quick.
Oh, did he really go? I don't remember seeing him.
Maybe I missed it. I thought he did. Excuse me. God, I got the blurry one. It's not even just my bad vision. This is a horrible chart. Maybe he didn't go. Maybe you're right. I thought he did for some reason, but maybe so he'll go early with the
next. I don't think he was called up yet when you guys drafted.
Yep, that's probably what it was. But yeah, he'll go nice and early and in that regard. So fun to see. Yeah, I wasn't super invested. I had small bids in for Cruz because I just don't have a lot of money. And outfield wasn't a priority of mine, a necessity, I should say. So I was focused elsewhere these last few fab periods. Aroldis Chapman, he was added in 92 leagues, as high as 54, as low as a dollar. The Pirates removed David Bednar from closing situations in Pittsburgh. Chapman's expected to be the guy who's been really good of late, too, like really good. On Monday night, he pitched the eighth, a clean inning. That was a leverage situation, so he did not get the save on Monday night. So don't overreact too much just yet, folks. But they said it would be a committee, and that'll happen from time to time. I still think Chapman's the main dude, but he's not going to get them all. So what's your thoughts? Were you interested in a guy like Aroldis Chapman?
No, I kind of had done my work with saves already, and I am good for now, especially with the fab being as low as it is. But yeah, if you need saves, or if you're a Bednar manager, then Chapman was definitely the play for you. I mean, the 16% walk rate still scares me very badly, but he has a 37% strikeout rate, so he's back to a 20% K-minus walk, so that's where you want to be. But the walks are just so scary. And it doesn't sound like Bednar will be back anytime soon. So I think Chapman's safe for a while if you did add him for saves.
Would you drop David Bednar?
Oh, man.
I say yes.
So I, in a vacuum, are you asking? Or if you were able to get Chapman as well?
No, just in a vacuum. Like if you, would he be a drop for you in general?
Oh, man, that's tough. Well, I'm still starting him in my DC where I have him, but I don't have any options.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame there.
Yeah, I guess. Bednar was so bad. I mean, he kind of did probably enough damage to your ratios as it is. But, yeah, I just said it doesn't sound like he's going to come back anytime soon. So, yeah, I guess drop Bednar.
Yeah, because my thing is if he does come back, say it's at least 2 weeks. So he's back for 2 weeks. What's he get, two saves, three saves at best? Like that's where my head's at thinking about him now. Teams do weird things, and maybe he's back tomorrow. I still think he's going to be out for a few weeks. I think he might not even get the job back by the end of the year. We'll see. That might be a spring training situation there. But I think Bednar, at least in 12s and below, is a drop, and I wouldn't be against it in 15s either.
Yeah, I agree.
Connor Dorby picked up in 86 leagues because for some reason he wasn't picked up. I was guilty. I didn't pick him up everywhere either. As high as 75, as low as a dollar. Since joining the Marlins on August 19th, Norby's hitting 313 with three homers and two steals, 14 runs scored, which is awesome. Two more hits on Tuesday night to top onto that. I love everything we're seeing with Connor Norby. He's going to be second base, third base eligible, which is pretty darn awesome. So what's your thoughts on this one?
So I think he got a big boost from the core series, Norby. But still, though, in week 22, he had two homers and a steal. Then last week, he had a homer and a steal. So he's been very productive for fantasy. I actually just pulled up the game. So we mentioned Edwards came back from the IL tonight. Norby batted second, so that's a good sign for him going forward. So I did miss out on Norby and Fab. I think he was added for that when he first got called up last week. But if he's available, I definitely add him. He's hitting at the top of the Marlins lineup, I'm sure, for the rest of the season. And he has power and speed, and average that won't hurt you. So I definitely like adding Norby if you can.
Yep, big fan of adding Norby wherever you can if you need a MICI, second base, third base, whatever you're looking for. I think there's definitely something to like there. Osvaldo Beto picked up in 78 leagues, as high as 32, as low as a dollar. We talked about him, but that's a two-step move for many. Jose Tena, who we kind of said in passing earlier in the show, picked up in 72 leagues, as high as $31, as low as a buck. Tena's hitting 318 on the year with the Nats. He got called up. He got called up early in the year, but since he was recalled on August 10th, let's look at those numbers real quick. Since he was recalled on August 10th, Jose Tena is hitting 339, two homers and a steal, second base, third base type guy. I know I added him in places I needed some middle infield help. So what are your thoughts on Jose Tena, who at least for the final month could be quite serviceable?
I think it was last week. I don't know if you're recording, but I told you I had no idea who this guy was. I never heard of him. But he's hitting second for the Nats, and he's playing every day. He's a lefty, and he's faced the last three lefties. So I was trying to pull up his minor league stats. I'm not being successful, but I trust they're good. And yeah,
I'll help you. Okay. At AAA this year, because he got traded from the Guardians at the deadline to the Nationals. I remember people were excited. He was in the
Lane Thomas trade then, right?
Yeah, Lane Thomas trade. And in the minors, hitting .287, 18 homers and 15 steals, kind of finally burst onto this, kind of woke up here. He's 23 years old, youngster. So this could be something.
He feels a lot like Luis Garcia Jr.
Yep. They might have a type. They might have a type.
Yeah, I mean, for them, having two Luis Garcias is a very good thing going forward. Luis at second, Tania at third. And yeah, so if you could add Tania, this is something I missed out on. I'll have to be careful or mindful of him next year for drafts. But I think the playing time's there, and especially like with Norby's batting second, Tania. So that's going to be very helpful for the plate appearances. And he has the home run speed potential like we just went over. So definitely a good add.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Now it's just kind of a free fall of guys. We talked about Albert Suarez already, so people are on top of that one. Picked up in 64 leagues, as high as 41, as low as a dollar. Miguel Amaya, he's been hitting really well in catchers, is a weird one. I want to ask you about Evan Phillips. Picked up in 53 leagues, as high as 93, as low as a dollar. They're still using a lot of relievers there in LA, so am I missing something on Evan Phillips? Did I miss an announcement of some sort?
You may have. I haven't heard anything though. So let me pull up reliever recon, aka Closer Monkey, as well. They have Kopech still and Phillips as a committee for the Dodgers closing role. Let me see what the breakdown looks like recently. So on FanGraphs, they have the game by game breakdown. Phillips. So Kopech got the save on the 28th. Then it was Phillips on the 29th. Kopech got a hold on the 30th, and then Phillips got the save on the 31st. So Phillips got the last two save chances, but it seems like Kopech is also pitching in high leverage. So I don't know, maybe it's a strict 50-50 platoon. We'll see what happens with the next save, but I get why Phillips was added. It's the Dodgers, and he's got the last two saves. So it's probably been a lot of fab spent on Phillips this year, and yes, all the Dodgers closers for that matter. So, I mean, maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't, who knows.
Big time. Jordan Walker got recalled, and they actually said the Cardinals are going to play him every day. So we'll see how that goes. Picked up in 53 leagues, as high as $74, as low as a dollar. He did go 5 for 5 on Sunday. That'll help the Fab Day click off in a big way. I was just out. He's one of those, like, I've seen enough. Like, prove me wrong for September. We'll talk again in the offseason, Jordan. But what was your thoughts when you saw this? Because I know there are the believers out there, some very excited people, when they said he's going to get a chance. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
I think I bid $4 on him. There, I mean, which is a lot for me, because I can average like $8 per week here on out. But yeah, the 5 for 5 stands out. And then also the fact that Marmol said when Walker got called up that he was primed for, literally his quote is, Jordan Walker primed for everyday role, is the headline that I'm reading. So we'll see. I mean, I feel like Marmol lies a lot, and no one really likes him after what's happened the last few years in St. Louis. But they did move Pham to presumably clear a spot for Walker. Let's see what the depth chart looks like real quick. They have Walker starting. Yeah. So it's supposed to be Lars in left, Walker in right, Ciani in center with maybe Victor Scott as well. So I guess Walker's going to play from here on out. It's just a matter of will he produce, like you said. So I was interested in adding him, but I couldn't break the bank, and I wasn't going to though.
Yep. I'm with you there. Just some quick hitters here. Porter Hodge was added in 52 leagues. He's doing that whole committee closing things with Lopez in Chicago. David Festa had a two-step this week, picked up in 51 leagues, as high as 81. Somehow Victor Robles is still available in 43 leagues. He got picked up for as high as 77. I know he's been a headache due to injuries, but he's been playing pretty well. I want to just get your quick thoughts on this, if you have any. Patrick Corbin added in 42 leagues, as high as $9, as low as a buck. Great two-step this week. Been very serviceable of late. Like, I surprised Mr. Bloomfield on Thursday night with some stats on Patrick Corbin, because I still have a tough time trusting Patrick Corbin, but he even went out there on a Tuesday night, looked pretty good in step one of the two-step. So were you in on a guy like Patrick Corbin?
I did, but then after listening to Sleeper in the Bus and like getting my head shaking a little bit, I moved down my bids and him in my bid list, Corbin. I still had bids in for him, but he went from being like my second most desired ad to like my second to last, maybe, just because it's Corbin, and we know how things go, right? He does so well when he's available, and then he gets this great matchup. He's probably going to destroy your ratios and have a blow up. But like you said, he definitely had a great start to it tonight. So when I decided to move him down, I looked at his Statcast, and he is the ugliest Statcast you could ever have for a pitcher. And
that sounds about right.
Yeah, it's just, you don't want to look at it unless you're like ready for Halloween or something, because it'll scare you. But so he throws his sinker, slider, and cutter the most. The only good pitch he has is his slider. And the other, I remember looking at like the game by game log, the WOBA and everything against his, and the XBA and the X slug against his sinker and cutter are so bad. So if hitters just lay off the slider and they look for the sinker or the cutter, they're going to crush him. So I don't know. It's just, I saw that. I'm like, I don't see him being, even though the matches were so good and I was kind of interested in adding Corbin, I couldn't get myself to add him in. Especially in that main event where I'm trying to win the league, it was the one spot where I was really serious about adding him. I didn't get him. Actually, the guy I'm competing with for first got him, so I was really hoping for the blow up, and didn't happen yet. But we'll see what happens on the second start. It's just that it's, I don't know. Like we said with the other guys, you can get lucky with a hot stretch to end the year, and the matchups were so good. So I actually recommended Corbin in my article for this past Sunday because of this two step, and then he gets the Marlins again next week.
Yep.
So it's not just the two starts, it's potentially the three starts. So we'll see what happens, but I don't know. I had him in DCs for like weeks like this. I started him in one of them, but it's definitely scary.
It's very scary, but he's getting the job done. Just don't watch the starts and pray it works. But yeah, other than that, like Zach Lytle back for a two step. I don't trust him. Torque was still available. He got picked up. Cody Bradford, who we talked about. Mackenzie Gore showing signs of life. MJ Melendez is looking good. So a lot of stuff along those lines. Even Jason Dominguez got picked up in 33 leagues. If you're ready, you want to recap some of our fab from the week here and see how you did. As you said, you're navigating the smaller purse size to make some bids.
Yeah, there's a hole in my wallet right now. So main event one. I added Reed Detmers, dropped Nick Lodolo. I guess I think I'm playing spoiler here. $8, $5 backup. Did not start Detmers versus the Dodgers. It's just more for the matchups at the end of the season. I think they're pretty good. And Detmers, I mean, he's just one of the most high upside pitchers that you'll get in waivers at this time of the year anyway. And then I added Jared Triolo, dropped Carson Fulmer, $2 on backup. The Pirates had a very good streaming schedule this week, especially for right-handed hitters. So looking to, and Triolo is actually kind of fast. He's been stealing a lot of bases too, which is surprising. Then I added Cooper Criswell, dropped Miles Michaelis, $1, $1 backup, the bad unicorn bid. I added Brant Herder, dropped Randy Vasquez, $1 on backup. And I think I had this set up when Herder was projected to have the two-step this week, but he ended up starting Sunday. So I ended up not even starting him, which is fine, but it was only $1. Main event two, this is the one that's competing. So this one this made me very happy as we were recording. I added Cade Povich, dropped Nick Lodolo, $5, $1 backup. So that was a big win for this week. But I want to talk about Lodolo's been so frustrating because he was probably pitching that entire time injured. And of course we didn't know about it. And I kept rolling him out there and he just got crushed. So I don't know. He feels very frail to me with the weird leg injury and now this finger injury. So I love the stuff for Lodolo. I'm hesitant to, I'll see what the ADP is next year, but it hurt this year. Like it was different from last year where he's got unlucky with the bad ball quality, but I don't know what your thoughts are on Lodolo. Going forward.
Yeah, I was already out on him because I thought he was still hurt, but it's just been a weird year from him, and he showed signs of life at times, and then there's other signs where it just was disruptively bad, like really, really bad. So he has to come at a discount for me to be interested this upcoming season, because it's already bad enough the ballpark he's in. If he's not looking like an ace, we're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, and that's a good point too, because he was so bad at home this year compared to the road. Yep. Yeah, so I had a Povich, drop Lodolo, and then I also so this one paid off already. I added McCutchen. Dropped Joe Urshela, $2 on backup. McCutchen homered last night, and they had a 7-game week, a lot of lefties. And this one kind of went on the radar. I forget how I found him, but J.P. Crawford came back. So I added him, dropped Jake Cave, $2 on backup. Crawford's back to leading off for the Mariners, so hopefully get some runs and decent average and other things from him. And this is the fun one. I added John Gray, dropped Randy Vasquez, $1 on backup. They got getting a zero from John Gray. And then another interesting one. So this is a looking forward play. I added Griffin Canning and I dropped Martin Perez, $1 no backup. So I'm just going to break out that tool we were talking about earlier and help the listeners out. So Griffin Canning, he gets the Twins next week, who have been a little bit above average versus righties, but then week 26 gets the White Sox, week 27, the White Sox. So I am hoping that stays true because I would love two more starts versus the White Sox from a streaming spot.
I took your advice. You texted me that on Sunday, and I put a on my 15s at least. I got a couple. He was down the waterfalls, and he ended up getting added on at least one, if not two, of the teams for a putt.
Yeah, that's a win for me then. As long as you already get him somewhere, that's yeah, what counts.
I got him at least one team for sure. He's down the waterfall, but yep, got him for a buck.
Nice. Yep. Nothing wrong with that. So main three, I added Crawford again, dropped David Hamilton, 2000 a backup. Added Cooper Criswell for his week against the White Sox this week. Dropped Carson Fulmer, 2000 a backup. And then I added Griffin Canning again here. Dropped Hayden Birdsong. So Birdsong has like one of the worst matchups to end the season. The tool that came helpful for dropping guys as well. $2, $1 backup. Then I added Victor Caratini, dropped Corey Lee, $1 no backup. And then I added Samuel Aldighieri, dropped Joe Boyle, $1 no backup. I think Aldighieri also has a decent streaming schedule to end the season as well. And then my OLAC, I got Cade Povich here. I dropped Carson Fulmer, $12, $2 backup. I added Criswell again, dropped Randy Vasquez, $4 to $1. I added Canning here, dropped Ginkle, $2 to nothing. And I got Victor Scott, dropped Lo Perfido, who was a big bust with that great matchup last week, $2, $1 backup.
Yeah, I dropped either benched or dropped a lot of Lo Perfido this week after being all in on the last week. I'm with you on that one.
I think he had one hit the entire week. It was ridiculous.
That one stung quite a bit. Just listening to your ads in general, it sounds like you need pitching. So that's where I see a lot of your navigating on that
one. Well, I kind of want to – I thought about asking you, but like the thing is, I've noticed my ERAs and whips have gotten so bad as the year has gone on. Like a lot of my teams, they start out really well, and then between injuries, like whether it's DCs or just – the losing guys to injury in general, like I feel like it could just be how I drafted. I don't know. Something I need to look at for next year.
Yep, you never know. It happened to me either last year or the year before in my OC. It's like it was great, and then just blew up at the end. Yeah. And I attributed it to trying to stream too much, but injuries also starts making you have to stream, and it just gets ugly and unravels from there. So you never know. Was that all your 15s?
Yeah, and you know what it was. I was using that tool that I just me. I'm like, I'm putting this into use.
Yeah, that's smart. It's smart though. Like it brings up some very eye opening things, especially for the stretch run. There's no doubt about that. Yeah. All right, so my OLAC, or I had a lot of money. I did get a Dylan Cruz share. I said screw it. I dropped Joey Lo Perfido. Got Cruz for $108, runner up 44. Got Jose Tena for 22, runner up at 17. Dropped Thairo Estrada. Got Casey Mize, dropped DL Hall 11-5. Mize is back, not starting him versus San Diego this week. And he wasn't my priority at pitcher, I'll say that much, but did get Casey Mize. I actually got more Mize than I thought I would as we go through this real quick. Listener League 1, I got outbid on everything I wanted. So you guys are just amazing listeners is all I'm going to say. Listener League 2, though, I got a Jose Tena share, dropped Tommy Pham 13-5. Got Casey Mize, dropped Jordan Hicks 3-0. Grabbed Griffin Canning, dropped Luis Garcia, the pitcher, 1-0 in that one. What did you have for your Yahoo action this week before I go to my 12s?
So, yeah, before I get to that, I'll say, so I pulled up Casey Mize, his schedule while you were talking. So he gets the Rockies next week at home. He gets a two-star versus the Royals on the Orioles, so I'd sit him for that. But then he gets the White Sox in last week. So I think you should hold on to him.
I think I'm because I put those bids in Saturday night. I saw your stuff Sunday, but I saw the Rocky start, and I'm like, okay, I'll see how I'll get him cheap this week. If he sucks for San Diego, so be it. If he looks semi good, he's got the Rockies, so yeah. I'll take my chances on that one. I'm in big look ahead mode, as you obviously are as well.
Yeah. I think I had Mize in an ad, but then I got rid of him. But I should have added him probably looking at those matchups. So good job, Bubba. So I am done with my 12-teamer now, as of now, but these are the last moves I made last week. I added Encarnacion Strand as a potential keeper for next year. I dropped Daniel Hudson. Then I added Taj Bradley. I did not start him in my last week matchup, but he could be a keeper for next year. I dropped Keydair Montero. I added Shane Baz, dropped Kershaw, and then I added AJ Puck, dropped Zebby Matthews. So Matthews is a drop, I would say, in 12s. Montero has a bad schedule. He's been kind of a hot stream, but I think he has bad matchups as well going forward. So yep, that's the books for the 12 teamer for the year.
All righty, for me and the OCs, it's got some fun stuff going on. OC one, Jose Tena dropped Joey Lo Perfido 3-1. Told you Joey was disappearing from teams. Added Connor Joe, was supposed to be four lefties, then it became Kyle Hendricks because Justin Steele went maybe for the better, but it looked like Hendricks pitched well. Got Connor Joe, dropped Juan Yepez 3-0. Yepez was good. It's dwindling quickly. Then I added Ramon Laureano, dropped Victor Vodnik 2-0, as I need to take all the chances on power I can find. And Ramon Laureano, Ryan opened my eyes to that, has been sneaky good of late. And the the batted ball quality has been really good for Laureano, which is terrifying to say out loud. In my OC2, where I'm doing well and still trying to move up, like, I know I'm not going to win the overall by any means, but it's kind of fun because you were talking about how, you know, you're just fighting for your league, and that's what I've been doing all year. Well, like, middle of last week, I was, like, 320th overall, still winning my league, but 320th overall. As of the recording of this show, I'm 139th. Like, it's just climbed all the way up. Now, I guess
look at you, Bubba.
I'm not going to win it all, but it's just funny how it's just, like, there's still time to move, at least to make things interesting. Not saying it's going to matter, but, like, every time I think it was Saturday night, I looked at the updates, and said, like, 220. I'm like, what the? What? How did this just happen? And it stood out in a big way. So, in this league, picked up Pete Crow Armstrong, which this is wild. This is the beauty of late season, especially OCs. Dropped Juan Yepez, 3-2. Added Miguel Amaya, dropped Bo Naylor, 3-0. Added Beto, dropped Zebby Matthews, 2-1. Added Albert Suarez, dropped Garrett Crochet, 1-0. So pretty pumped on those ads, honestly.
Those are great ads.
Spent a whopping $9 for four guys that I think will help me quite a bit. So pretty pumped on that. OC3, which is every week's the Wild West of what is going on. Like, yeah, I got Dylan Cruz in this one, actually. $14 runner-up of $3. So there you go. Evan Phillips went for 19 this league, runner-up of zero. That was not me, but I got Dylan Cruz, got Tenna, dropped Loberfito, 3-0. Got JP Sears, dropped David Bednar, 1-0. Sears has Seattle this week, who's been kind of struggling and got some good matchups. I think he has the White Sox next week with I might be wrong, but got mixed up with Jin joining the rotation. Got DJ Hurst, dropped Blanco, Ronel Blanco, 1-0. Blanco's supposed to go to the pen. Got Miguel Amaya, dropped Adrian Del Castillo, 1-1, runner-up of one, which makes me feel good when you're in fourth place and the guy above you gets the hosed on that one. But I talked about it on Thursday's Bubba in the Bloom, if people for some reason aren't listening to that also. I love Adrian Del Castillo. Love the profile of Del Castillo. Problem is, he sits for his lefties. The D-backs, I think, face three or four lefties this week. There's a chance Gabriel Moreno comes back next week. So there's a lot of moving parts that don't bode well for Castillo for the foreseeable future. I could be wrong. Hope I'm wrong. Kid's good. But I took the chance of getting Miguel Amaya, who's been swinging it well, and I'll just play roulette at catcher if I have to for the last few weeks.
Makes sense.
All righty. Before we head out of here, let's take a few listener questions. We have one in the chat here from our buddy Joe G. He says, is Adelis Garcia finally a drop for a hot bat? Well, I got my thoughts. I'll give it to you first.
Okay, let me pull up my DC where I have Garcia to see how the last few weeks have been. Oh, man, it's been ugly. He had that 1-3 homer week in week 21, hit 333. Man. I hate dropping someone like Garcia now.
It's probably 12-teamer shallower for Joe's also.
Yeah, I think his road league's kind of deeper. I guess. I could just see him going off for like 9 homers or like 7 homers over the last 4 weeks. It's definitely in his range of outcomes, but I guess, I mean, he's been so bad this year, and I guess I can bless that drop.
Yep. I'm totally fine with it at this point in the year. Mix and match, play the hot hand. Like, it might come back and backfire on you, but the way he's playing, I think the stars are going to have to align for that one to take place. He seems pretty lost out there, all things considered. Martin Sikulski asks, speaking of August standouts, where does Corbin Carroll ultimately end up next season? If he continues his August trajectory, can you see him approaching late first round, early second round territory? Well, in the meatball draft, he went early second round. I don't think he enters first round territory just because it's so deep, man. Just like look at the player pool. Like, who do you take out is the conversation there. But it could. If the right drafter, anything's possible. What's your thoughts on where Carroll could end up next year?
So I heard a crazy stat today on the RotoWire pod with Jeff and Fred Zinke, and they were saying that Corbin Carroll has earned what Freddie Freeman has earned. And I am looking at the player rater on Razzball, and Corbin Carroll is actually a cent higher than Freddie Freeman on the year now, which is mind-blowing.
Wow.
And in your meatball draft, Carroll went, I think, pick 16 or 17. So he's right on the cusp of the first round. I think he moves into the back end of the first round next year. He went pick
18. Yeah.
He was 18? Yeah.
Yeah, which was four picks in front of Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, so I think based on how Carroll has ended, he will creep into the maybe like pick 13, 14, I think. For a 15-teamer, he'll be a first-rounder.
just a fun question. Like, who does he take out? Does he take out J-Rod? That's probably a possibility. You got Tatis, Lindor. Those are the last three picks of round one. I don't – maybe Kyle Tucker falls. Maybe I was a complete fool with that pick. But
so I know Jenny took Vlad and Lindor. I think they get recency bias down potentially because I viewed Lindor as a top player, but the market didn't this year.
Yeah,
Jenny's smart, so she understands his value, but I don't know if the entire drafting population will view Lindor as a first rounder, you know.
Yep, very true. That's the fun in all this, but yeah, it's pretty deep. Like that back end pick, you get two pretty good studs coming around that turn,
for
which
sure
will make things very, very interesting. A couple more questions here. Joe G also says, need to drop one of Holiday or Norby, redraft Roto. What say you, Ben?
Oh man,
He also commented, he said, I think I have my answer. He's over. He's talking about Holiday. He's 0-3 or 6 left on base at this point. So
yeah, so I spoke up Norby earlier with the Fab.
Yeah.
Where's Holiday? Oh, he's taken. That's why. So I don't have Holiday, so I don't know how badly he's been doing lately.
It's been brutal. After like the hot start, it's been ice cold. Like I can – I'll pull him up real quick. It's been
– Oh, yeah, no homer since that three-homer week. It's been bad averages. Cold. Yeah, I go Norby over Holiday probably.
Yep, I'm with you. Norby for me as well. Go ahead and drop Holiday, Joe. And then BP at futures_bet says, guys, a little twist. Break out the crystal ball and think of some guys that it may be wise to save a couple bucks for and spend in the coming weeks. Well, you mentioned some pitchers already. You, and on the flip side, you could probably use that same chart to look at potential teams to stack. But you already hit on some pitchers. Anybody else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, I'll be nice here. So the other guy that I had in my bid list for not to start this week, but kind of like with the Griffin Canning mindset is Davis Martin. So he projects to face the Guardians, the Angels, the Red Sox, the Tigers, and the Angels. So I'm looking at the Angel starts for Davis Martin and maybe the Tigers as well. But he has 5 starts projected over the next 4 weeks. So he has a 2-step in there somewhere. I don't know what is offhand. Let me pull it up on this view because it should appear. He's projected to get the so he gets the Red Sox this week. He gets the Guardians next week. But then listen to this. He goes Angels week 26, Martin, and then the Angels and the Tigers for 2 starts week 27. So I am going to try to add Davis Martin if nobody in my league listens to this podcast.
So the final 3 starts could be pretty, pretty, pretty nice. So
yep, that's my one.
There's your crystal ball, BP. No one Okay, I don't say not many will mention Davis Martin this week. Let's put it that way. They'll at least wait until they see that start coming up in another week or so to start mentioning Davis Martin.
That's rotation pending, of course. I mean, the Angels did. I think this accounts for Detmers in the rotation, luckily, because that was the big move that the Angels made. This is the wrong team. Never mind the White Sox.
Yeah,
yeah, he's facing
they're garbage. They're not going to do smart things right now.
So Martin's the ace right now, so he's in the pitch.
Yeah, Martin's the ace right now. That's
besides Crochet.
That's actually a sadly true statement right now. So there you go. There you go. All right. And on that note, we're going to wrap things up here, Ben. Final thoughts as we wrap up another week of Fab. You'll be out next week, and then you'll be back to, you know, final two stretch runs there.
Yeah, I'm going to miss being on next week, but I'm going on vacation for a short vacation, which I haven't really taken one this year, so it'll be nice. But yeah, that's like the names we just mentioned with the streaming. Just pay attention to the matchups right now, and like with the case of Francis, maybe you find a pitcher who's pitching really well over their head, and they might keep it going. But also be careful too; you don't want any blowups and ruin your ratios. So just gotta keep focused and try to keep football on the back burner as long as possible. Assuming you guys out there play.
Yep, stay focused because like just going over the Fab results in each league, you can see a lot of people are over it. This is the best way I'll say it. Just kind of over it. So if you want to grind and make the most of it, you can. There's still guys out there to make your team better for the final few weeks, and we'll see where it goes. But we'll wrap it up there. Make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at BreakingBen_T as work over there at Sports Ethos. I'm on Twitter at BDintric. You can find my work everywhere. And we'll be back with you guys next week with another episode of Bench with Bubba. But for now, this is Bench with Bubba, episode 686. Catch you all next time.